Mine or Agatha. And Sancheirov, again, the story was that he had conquered and destroyed the kingdom of the 10 tribes, and he had exiled them. By the way, Sancheirov was an innovator in this. He was the first person of the ancient world, this is recorded by historians as well, who, when he would subjugate nations, he would transpose populations. This idea of Gaulus, you know, so it's a little strange, really. You know, you conquer a nation, then you let them stay there. What is this idea of kicking a nation out of the land? So this was actually invented by Assyria. It was a way of disorienting people, because when people are in their natural habitats, so they could revolt, they know their way around, etc. So he created the idea that when you conquer populations, you move them to different areas that they're not familiar with. So he kicked the 10 tribes out of Israel, and he brought other people, he brought Goyim into Eretz Israel, and those Goyim became the Samaritans, or the Kusim, that the Gemara often talks about. And the Kusim converted to Judaism, but there's a machlokas in the Gemara. Did they convert because they really believed in Torah? Or did they convert because of Arayos? Arayos with an aleph, not an ayin, meaning they were afraid of the wild animals that they were not familiar with. That is why there's a consistent machlokas in the Gemara. Do we regard Kusim, Samaritans, as Jews, if they're Geirei Emes? Or do we regard them as non-Jews if they're Geirei Arayos? Now, this is a machlokas in the Mishnah. However, by the Amorayim already by the Amorayim, the Kusim had drifted so far from Judaism that they intermarried and the like, and they certainly have the presumptive status of non-Jews, and that is the status of the Samaritans today. So it's important to remember that the Machlokas in the Gemara, whether the Kusim are Jewish or not Jewish, is not Nogeya B'Zmanazeh, and it was not even Nogeya in the time of the Gemara itself. Now, there's something else to keep in mind. That is, often in the Gemara, the word Kusi will be used when it really means Goy. And this is a product of Catholic censorship. In other words, the Catholic Church employed Jews, renegade Jews, to censor certain words. And in fact, there's even a style book. The Catholic Church said when you hit certain expressions, cut them out, because they're anti-Christian. Some of these are very absurd because sometimes, well, I'll give you an example. I'll give you one example, how literal this was taken. So the Catholic Church considered Goy to be a pejorative, negative expression, and they instructed the censors that whenever you come across the word Goy in the Gemara, you are supposed to put Kusim. Now the Kusim were, you know, Samaritans, nothing to do with Goyim, but it's meant to Goy. So in one place, the Gemara quotes the Pasuk that the Jewish people are a Goy Kadosh. Now, so the censor put Kusi Kadosh. You know, because it was mechanical. I mean, the censors didn't know what the Gemara was saying. They just had these words that they were looking for. So the point I got to keep in mind is sometimes when the Gemara discusses Kusim, it is discussing Samaritans, and sometimes it is just a censored word for Goy. And in the newer Gemaras, they go back to the older nusach. In fact, it's interesting, one of the words that was supposed to be censored was the word Talmud itself. Now, Talmud, as one of the, they didn't like the word Talmud, they were anti-Talmud. So they said, whenever the word Talmud appears in the Talmud, take it out and make it Limud instead. So that's why you'll sometimes find, in some Gersos, something like Talmud Torah, and that's not a reference to the book Talmud, becomes Limud Torah, connected to them, right? You'll find differences, and that is actually from censors as well, whole thing. I understand that this censorship manual is one of the rarest Svarim. You can't get it anywhere. It's a very, very rare manuscript of the censorship directive. So I'm sure the Vatican has a few spare copies, but it's very, very hard to find. It's a rare book. Okay. So be it as it may, we're discussing that after Sancheirov exiled the 10 tribes, he went south to Yerushalayim, and miraculously 185,000 of his soldiers died. So the Gemara now quotes Rav Huna, the Amora. Amar Rav Huna, Eser Masois Nasa Oso Rasha Bioso Hayom. Hashem wanted Sancheirov to reach Yerushalayim Erev Pesach, so that his army would die the night of Pesach, which is a time of great miracles. And as a result, although Sancheirib was quite a distance away from Yerushalayim, and he was having a huge army cannot travel that fast, Hashem gave him amazing speed, that he was able to have 10 cities that he was able to pass by, each of which was a distance from each other, in one day. In other words, this is called Kfitza Saderech, the shortening of the road. And we prove this from a verse in Yeshayahu, which is describing the alacrity, the speed through which Sancheirib was able to move through Eretz Yisrael. Now, the problem is going to be, we're going to mention a lot of places, but they add up to more than 10, so we're going to kind of calculate. Bo'al Ayas. He passed through the town of Ayas. These are all towns in the metropolitan area of Jerusalem. Of Arba Migron. So let's keep count. Ayas, Migron. L'michnash Yafkid Kalev. He deposited a lot of his property in Michmash. That's 3. Avru Mabara, they passed Mabara, that's 4. Geva Malon Lanu, Geva was a lodging for him. They took a lunch break at Geva. Chorda Harama, Harama trembled at the approach of Sancheirib. Givas Sho'ol, which is not the modern Givas Sho'ol, but Givas Sho'ol, the district of Sho'ol, again, Givas Sho'ol, Nasa ran away in fear. Sahali Kolech Baskalim, Baskalim raised her voice. Again, Baskalim is a city. Hakshibi Laisha. Laisha was listening. Aniya Anasos. Anasos was impoverished. Nadada Madmena. Madmena wandered away in astonishment. Yoshve Hagevim Heizim. And those who inhabited the Gevim, and yet another place, Heizim, they were. Heizim meaning they had the chutzpah to try to stop him, but they could not stop him. And then finally, right before Yerushalayim, is Nov. Remember, Nov was the town where the Kohanim lived in the time of David HaMelech. Shaul killed the Kohanim of Nov because they gave refuge. And that is the stop right before Yerushalayim. So, the Gemara says, if you count all of these places, in other words, this takes you all the way to Yerushalayim. So let's see. Ayas is 1, Migron is 2, Michmash is 3, Mabara is 4, Geva is 5, Rama is 6, Givashal is 7, Baskalim is 8, Laisha is 9, Anasos is 10, Madmena is 11, Gevim is 12, and Nov is 13. He went through 13 stops. Now, by the way, see the Kiddush in this drasha, because the Pasuk does not directly say he did this all in one day. That's Rav Huna's Kiddush. Rav Huna's adding that the purpose of listing all of these stops is to indicate that he did it in one day. But there are 13 stops. So the Gemara says that one of these is not a stop, it's a drasha. Sahali Kolech Baskalim, raise your voice, Baskalim, is not as we thought that Baskalim was a place and raise your voice was pray for deliverance, but rather Navihu Degomer Lu L'Knesset Yisrael, the Jewish people are called Baskalim. Baskalim, and we'll see why, and it is really saying you, the Jewish people that are the daughter of Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, who did mitzvahs like the waves of the sea, right? The waves of the ocean keep on coming and coming and coming and never stop. That's what Galim is. So you're a Baskalim, right? You are the daughter of those people who did waves. Raise your voice in prayer and you will be saved. By the way, you may remember, just when we said Tehillim for the 3, it's a very unusual name, that the mother of one of the boys, Gilad Ben Baskalim, you may remember. It's a very, very unusual, beautiful name, that Mrs. Sher's name is Baskalim. But Baskalim is the daughter of the righteous Avos who did mitzvahs Gigali Hayam. So that takes out one of the names. So that gets you down to 12. Now we take out another name. Hakshivi Laisha. Listen, Laish. Now we thought Laish was a place, but no. Mehai Laitistifi. What it means is, do not be afraid of Sancheirav. Be afraid of the lion that's coming later. And that's a reference to Nebuchadnezzar, who is called the lion, meaning Sancheirav isn't going to get you. But a few years down the road, Nebuchadnezzar comes, who is called a lion. So again, that's not a place, right? So we've eliminated, out of the 13 places, Bas Galim is a reference to the Jewish people having the merit of the Avos, and Laish is just telling them, be afraid of the lion who is coming down the road, that's Nebuchadnezzar. So that gives you 11 places. We still have to take out one. So we answer, Aniya Anasos. Anasos was impoverished. That is not referring to one of Sancheirav's stops, but that's a reference to the future prophecies of Yirmiyahu, who prophesied about Nebuchadnezzar, who comes from the city of Anasos. Which means, in this prophecy of what Sancheirav will do, there's also references to what Nebuchadnezzar will do. And Yirmiyahu is going to prophesy, Ditziv, that was the Haftarah last week, Divrei, Yirmiyahu, Ben Chilkiyahu, Min HaKohanim, Asher B'Anasos. Now the Gemara then asks, how can you say that Laish is Nebuchadnezzar, because Nebuchadnezzar is called a lion? When Nebuchadnezzar is called a lion, he's called an Aryeh, and here it says Laish, and the Gemara just explains that there are many terms for lions, and Laish and Aryeh are both terms for lions. So Nebuchadnezzar can be referred to as any of these different lions. Okay. So one second. So what have we taken out? One second. The Gemara now asks that now you have less than 10, but I think this worked out perfectly. I had counted 13 places. We had taken out Bas Galim. We had taken out Laish. And we had taken out Anasos. So that's good. So 13 minus 3 gives you 10. So I think, the idea is like this, I think that Gemara is assuming that Nov is already considered to be Yerushalayim. Nov is immediately outside of the city. So really, you have 12 stops before you get to Nov. Because Nov is essentially Yerushalayim at that point. So if you have 12 and you subtract 3, you only have 9 stops that he went through. How could we say 10? And the Gemara's answer is that when it says Ovru Ma'bora, they passed Ma'bora, don't count Ma'bora as one, but rather there were two adjacent towns. One was called Ovru is not a verb, it's a noun. There's Ovru and there's Ma'bora. So instead of saying he passed Ma'bora, there is Ovru and Ma'bora that counts with it. Okay. All right. But now you're going to see an interesting thing, that all of this ended with the Pesach, which, by the way, is the Haftarah of the last day of Pesach in Chutz Laaretz. Od Hayom Benov Lamot. This is before he did it. That very day that he leaves, goes through all of these towns, he will be standing at Nov, waving his hand against Jerusalem. Now, what is the significance of that? So, Amar Rav Huna. So Rav Huna says the following amazing idea. Oso hayom nishtayer mi'avona shel Nov. Right? What happened again? This is going back. Now remember, this is Chizkiyahu HaMelech. How many years before was there the great sin that Shaul committed of eradicating Nov Yerech Kohanim? It would be several hundred years before. Remember the story. This is before David HaMelech is king. David HaMelech was anointed, but Shaul is still the king. And Shaul is insanely jealous of David HaMelech. And he's tracking him down. He wants to kill him. And David seeks refuge in a city of Kohanim, Nov Yerech Kohanim. And the Kohanim give him food. And when Shaul, through the instigation of Doeg, who is his advisor, discovers that these Kohanim have given temporary shelter to David, he orders the Kohanim to be massacred. Now, this was not a huge number. Don't think that there's like 100,000 Kohanim. Basically, it's like 34 Kohanim were killed. But that's a big deal. And this is the chait of Nov era Kohanim. And because of this chait, there was a tremendous punishment that was nigzer on Am Yisrael. But this punishment had an expiration date. It's a very, very strange idea. Meaning, sometimes the way Hashem punishes for avos is he gives you a little at a time. So Hashem stretches the onesh over hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. So this death, this accident, this setback, this can all be a partial punishment of no avirah. Rav Huna's drasha is, on hayom, this very day, he is standing at Nov, which we think means Sancheirev is at the city of Nov, right outside of Jerusalem. It actually means this is the last day for the remaining punishments for the sin of Nov Yerakohanim. It's going to expire. The result was Sancheirev's astronomers, or not astronomers, astrologers, had a sense that this is the last chance to exact real severe punishments on Yerushalayim. Because of the chait of killing Nov Yerakohanim, if we don't do it today, we're not going to have that power tomorrow, or even tonight, because the midas hadin for this chait is going to expire. So therefore, the very day that Sancheirev got to Yerushalayim, which was Erev Pesach, his astrologers told him, "You better conquer the city now." Because now you will win, because there is still a residual chait of Nov Yerakohanim. If you wait until tonight, that Midas Adin, that Kitrug, that prosecution, is going to expire. So Amri Le Kaldoi, his astrologers told him, E Azli Soidna, if you go right now, and you just arrived, go right now, Yachlisle, you will be able to be victorious. V'ilo, if you don't go right now, lo yachlisle, you will not be able to do it. And indeed, it talks about the fact the astrologers looked at his miraculous travels, that he was able to cover 10 days' journey, these 10 stops were a day apart, in one day. They were telling him, this is a sign from Hashem, that he wants you to be here and destroy the city today. Orcha deboi l'skuye basuri yome, a path that should have taken 10 days. Saga b'chad yoma, you did it in one day. So kimata li Yerushalayim, when he got to Yerushalayim, this was Erev Pesach, shadu le bistarki, he raised his throne on the top of a mound of a hill, ad desolik v'yasev mi'ulei shur. In other words, he wanted to see what this great city looks like. It's a wall, right? So he had to get a high chair on top of a mound where he would be able to look down into the city. And he saw the whole city. And it didn't look as big as Nineveh. It was not as impressive as the cities that he knew. So he said, Hala dahi tarted Yerushalayim. This is the city of Yerushalayim. The Allah argashas kol mishrasi, that I was going crazy, traveling, you know, so quickly to get here to destroy this city. Physically, it is smaller and weaker than all the other cities of the nations that I conquered. So as a result, he basically, and similarly, he looked at the Beis HaMikdash and he said the same thing. So he basically said, you know, I don't have to be in a rush. We could take off. We came from a big trip. We're all tired. Let's rest, and tomorrow morning we'll finish this city. So Amri Leh, but his astrologers told him, do it now. Nishti be yodoy, do it right now. Amar Lahu, Tamisu, I am wondering, why are you bothering me? Lamachar, I'll do it tomorrow. And tomorrow, we have so many soldiers, each one will simply take a brick, take a stone from the wall, and destroy the whole city. We'll just take it apart. Well, of course, that very night, as they're preparing for the big battle tomorrow on the first day of Pesach, a Malach of Hashem comes and it destroys the 185,000 soldiers of Sancheirev's army. And Rav Papa says somewhat laconically, Haynu di Amri Yinshi, this illustrates a popular saying, Bas Dina, Bas means when you delay. When you delay your judgment, Badal Dina, sometimes the judgment doesn't happen at all. Meaning, this is a general mussar that never assume, just never, it's not just him, never assume that what you can do today, you'll be able to do tomorrow. You never really know what's going to happen tomorrow. Sankeyrov just assumed, oh sure, let's rest, we'll do it tomorrow. And of course it didn't work. This is what Pirkei Abba says, right? Hillel says, Al tomar l'she'efne eshne. Never say, when I have time, I will learn Torah. Shema lo tifana, lest you will never have the time later. Because there's always going to be some excuses. But again, it is an interesting thing that Onshim have an expiration date. Hashem is geyser that this particular sin will be punished only until a certain time. And once that time passes, that sin is now forgiven. It's like a statute of limitations, almost, on this. That the statute of limitations is you cannot be punished for this sin beyond a certain time. Now, that's not true for everything. We find that Chet HaEgel does not have a statute of limitations, that everything the Jewish people suffer a little bit of the Chet HaEgel that is behind it. But at least this particular thing, of course, people ask the Kasha, the Mefarshim ask the Kasha, that, all right, the Chet HaEgel was a sin of the Jewish people, but the killing of Novir Kohanim was a Chet of Shaul HaMelech. So in what way could that have been used against Chizkiyahu, who, after all, Chizkiyahu is a descendant of David HaMelech, who was the victim of all, or at least the intended victim of all of this. So why would the Chet of Nov have any relevance to giving Sancheirov the power over Chizkiyo and Yerushalayim? Right? That's a question the Mefarshim ask. He doesn't really answer that question. He just explains generally that part of the sin of killing the Kohanim was not just the killing of, not just murder, but it meant there were fewer Kohanim to do the avoda of the Beis Hamikdash. And therefore he felt that the Jewish people, although in light of the numbers of Kohanim that I said, that shouldn't have been the case, but the Orthodox there is assuming that many Kohanim were killed, and as a result, Korbanos were not able to be brought. So the Aveira, so that was a sin of Am Yisrael, that Am Yisrael didn't have the merit of Korbanos for a long time. And that would be something that could be a demerit against them. So it's not the chait of the killing of the Kohanim, but it's the chait of not having the Korbanos that they brought.
And the question of punishing future generations?
Well, that is the case, because we do find that when it comes to things like bringing korbanos, especially, this is the collective merit and lack of merit of Am Yisrael as a whole, because korbanos are national functions. So in that sense, it is possible to punish future generations because they lack the merit that the korbanos were given. Korbanos bring merit on future generations. Okay. So now the Gemara is switching gears, and it's actually a little difficult to figure out what the connection is. Rashi, in other words, we're going to talk actually about David and Goliath, right? Everyone knows the famous story. This is before David became king, about Goliath was a great giant of the Philistines that was making fun of the Jewish people and harassing and killing soldiers, killing Eden. So David killed Goliath. Now, you're going to see that the Gemara is going to connect this to the story of Nov Yerakohanim. So since we mentioned Sancheirov was at Nov, and that is because of the chait of Nov Yerakohanim, we're going to mention David and Goliath, and there'll also be a connection with Nov. And it actually gives Goliath a different name. He is called Yishbi of Nov. So Goliath came from Nov also. So Nov must have had a few different neighborhoods to go on him, and a Philistine neighborhood. Asher b'yelidei harapha. He was one of the children of Rapha. And you'll see, Harapha is another name for Orpah. So if you remember, Rus and Orpah were actually, well, in the Megillas Rus, they're just described as two Moabite women. Remember that Naomi and Elimelech had two sons, Mahlon and Chilion, and they went to Moab during a famine. And Mahlon married a woman called Rus, who eventually became Jewish, and Chilion married a woman called Orpah. And when Naomi went back after the death of her husband, so Rus went back with her, after the death of Mahlon and Chilion, everybody died. So Rus went back, and Orpah stayed. Now, it does not say in the Megillah that Rus and Orpah are sisters. You would not know that in the Megillah. And yet Chazal had a Masorah that these were two brothers who married two sisters, that Rus and Orpah are actually sisters, and they both were the children of the king of Moab, who was Eglon Melech Moab. Now, fascinatingly enough, therefore, David and Goliath are related, because David is the great grandson of Rus, and Goliath is described here as the child, or Yishbi Beno, which is his other name, Yishbi of Nov, is described as the child of Orpah. Now, the child might also be grandchild, by the way. It doesn't have to mean even directly. So Goliath comes from Orpah, and David comes from Rus. Right? So they're cousins of sort, either, you know, we don't know exactly what level of cousins, second cousins, whatever, but they are cousins, Orpah and Rus. And that's what it is. Now, why is Goliath called Yishbi Beno? Was his name Yishbi? So, no, his name was Goliath. But Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, Ish Sheba al Iskenov. That, in a sense, Hashem gave Goliath this power to hurt Jews because this was still a punishment. In other words, the Kohanim had already been killed. This was a punishment for no miracle. So Yishbi Benov, Yishbi is Ish. Yish, right? Ish Sheba al Iskenov. Now, this doesn't mean necessarily that Goliath was consciously aware of this. It's not that Goliath said, I'm here to punish you for the sin of Nov Yerachohanu. But spiritually, that's exactly what happened. Hashem gave Goliath a certain koach over Am Yisrael to punish them for the sin of Nov Yerachohanim. And to some degree, this was even a punishment of David, because even though David is the victim, and this actually may answer my question before as well, but David is the reason why the city was killed. An interesting thing, that if the murderer was looking for me, and as a result kills the whole city, I have a certain responsibility for putting that city in danger. That maybe David should not have gone to Nov Yerachohanim if he could have anticipated that Shaul would do all of these things. So therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to David, Ad Masa Yehavazeh Tomen B'Yachah, how long will you have this sin? Al Yadcha, because of you, Neraga Noiver Kohanim, you, David, are responsible for the killing of Noiver Kohanim. You endangered this city. Al Yadcha, Nitra Dai Kademi. Wow, you see how David is being blamed for everything. Because of you, Daye Kademi lost his Olam Haba. this is a pretty strange accusation. Daye Kademi was the informer. He was Shaul's advisor. And he is the one who informed that David is there, putting into action the massacre of the city. Because of this, Doeg lost his Olam Haba. So Hashem is saying to David, it's your fault that Doeg lost his Olam Haba. Because Doeg had been a tzaddik. It's pretty amazing that, you know, you're blaming David. It reminds me when I was a silly story, but when I was a little kid, so I got into a fight with somebody. And he tried to punch me in the face. I remember I ducked, and he hit the wall. And he broke a finger.
Beautiful.
So I remember that his mother came to my mom, and your son had no right to duck.
Oh my God.
He says, this was a fight, but certainly he wouldn't have had the right to break his hand, and by ducking, he broke his hand. So it's like I get blamed for he broke his finger. So here's the same thing. Dubin gets blamed because Dayeg says Lashon Hara on that, right?
Similarly, someone broke their hand on my face.
Oh, yeah?
Okay. And I got blamed.
Okay.
Really?
Okay. Oh, well. good bones? Good bones. Okay, counselor. Okay. And keep in mind as well, this is another thing Dubin is blamed for. Al Yadcha Narag Shaul Ushlosh Espana. You are responsible for Shaul and his three sons being killed in war. Because remember, all of this is because of Nov Yerakohanim. Because of that sin, Shaul and his three sons, including Yonasan, David's best friend, were killed in war. So Hashem is telling David, you are responsible for the deaths of the Kohanim. You are responsible for Doeg losing his share in Olam Haba. You are responsible for the death of Shaul and his three sons. So now I'll give you a choice. What do you want? Yichle Zarecha, shall I destroy your seed so you'll have no children or your children will die? Oh, Timaser Biadoy, or you'll suffer through enemies, but your children will be able to live. So Amar Lufanav. So David said, Ribono Shel Olam, Mutav Emoser Biadayim. I would rather be delivered in the hands of an enemy and possibly killed, as long as the children I already had will survive and there'll be a Malchus based on it. Meaning, I would rather have the punishment carried out on me and my children will be able to survive and have a Malchus. Mutav Emoser Biadayim. I would rather be delivered to the hands of the enemy, even if they kill me. Below Yichle Zari, this means you already had children, and my children should not be destroyed. So now you'll see the story. So Yemachad, one day, Nafak Lishkar Baza. Yeah, this is a Persian phrase. It's the name of a village. He went to a certain village. Asa Satan Vidmi Lekitavya. The Satan that's trying to entice David, you'll see the story, took on, the Satan can change shapes and forms. So the Satan appeared like a deer, as if there's this deer that David could catch and check. So Pasach Bei Gira. David shot an arrow. Now again, it's interesting what an arrow would do. Presumably, Jews only hunt for food. Right? Jews don't hunt for recreation. That's not a correct thing to do. Al-Khaira, if you kill the deer with an arrow, then you can't eat it. Right? Now there's a famous medrash that says that Esav was such a skillful hunter that Esav could shoot an arrow exactly at the place around the neck where you have to do shechita with a knife. But technically, it is kosher. If I could shoot a sharp arrow that would slice the arteries of the neck right across the bottom of the neck, that would be a kosher shechita. So maybe David could do that. The alternative might be that the arrow might just immobilize the animal, and then it could be shechted. But even then, it's not so much. In many cases, if the arrow went through a vital organ, even if the animal isn't killed, it would be a treva. So even if you shechted the animal, it would not be kosher. But be it as it may, he shot arrows at it, below Masha, but he couldn't reach it. Mashchei Adam Kilieretz Plishin. So he's following this deer, which is the Sata, till he crosses into Philistine territory. Right, he crossed the, which was an unprotected border. Kidechazia Yishvi Benayif. When Yishvi Benayif saw him, Yishvi Benayif is not Goliath, he's Goliath's brother. Also, he's right. Goliath was already killed. So Amar, Hainu Hai Dekatlu Goliath Achi, this is the guy who killed Goliath, my brother. Kamte the Usve. He put him under an olive press. In other words, an olive press is a very, very heavy beam of wood that you press on the olive. So he put him on an olive press and he sat on the olive press. He was a huge guy, kind of to crush David to death. But it's Ovid named Nisa, a miracle happens. Machile Ara Mitute. The ground below the olive press turned into a sinkhole, meaning to say, on one hand, this Yishri Beno was putting pressure on him, on the other hand, the ground itself goes lower. So David was able to escape. And Hainu Dichsiv, and this is a remez to what David says in Tehillim, Tarchiv Atsa'adi Tachtoi, you enlarged my step under me, meaning you literally enlarged the space where I could walk, below Madu Karsulai, and my ankles were not crushed, meaning to say you gave me room to be able to escape. But then it goes on, and it says, Ahu Yema, that very day that David was wandering in the land of the Plishtim, and David encountered Yishvi Benov and was miraculously saved. Apanya Demaile Shaptahavi, it was Friday afternoon, Erev Shabbos. Avishai ben Tsruya, this is David's nephew. Remember, David's main general was Yoav ben Tsruya, and Avishai ben Tsruya was Yoav's younger brother, one of David's generals. Tsruya, by the way, it's very interesting. Tsruya is a woman. Tsruya is David's sister, Yishai's daughter. So it's interesting, because of the royal family, the members of David's family, if they came from the sister of the king, were called by the sister, not their father. So Avishai, we don't know the name of the father, but Yoav and Avishai ben Tsruya, Tsruya is the mother, David HaMelech's sister. So Avishai ben Tsruya was preparing for Shabbos. Havi Kochayef Reshe, he was washing his hair, biarba gabe demaya, with measures of water. Chayzinu kisme dama, he found in the water droplets of blood. In other words, this is kind of a divine sign that David is in danger. It's a siman min hashamayim, that in the water itself there was blood. That's one interpretation. Or ika diamri, some people say a different thing. Asa yaina itrif kameh, a dove, a white dove came and flapped its wings. And he realized that since Klal Yisrael is compared to a dove, as a king is the leader of Klal Yisrael, that would be a sign of distress. But either way, Avishai gets a siman min hashamayim that David is in danger. Amar Avishai, Knesset Yisrael ki yaina emsi, look at Yisrael is compared to a dove, etc. Shema mina, David malka di Yisrael b'tsara shari. David, Melech Yisrael, is in trouble. Asa Lebesa, he went to David's house, Lo Ashkechei. He couldn't find him. Shadra Lebe Midrasha, he looked at the base medrash. Maybe David is learning Erev Shabbos. Lo Ashkechei. Amar. So now, Avishai had the following shayla. Tanan, we have a general rule in Sanhedrin. Ein Rochman al Susa. A commoner, a person who's not a king, is not allowed to ride the king's horse. In other words, al kavod hamelech, the king's horse, nobody else can ride. Ein yoshvan al kiso, no one is allowed to sit on the king's throne. Ein mishtamshin b'sharvito, you're not allowed to use the scepter of the king. Right? This is how you honor the king. But apparently, David HaMelech had a very fast horse, so Avishai is wondering, b'shas hasakonamai, if the king is in danger, am I permitted to ride on the king's horse in order to rescue the king? Now, l'chara, much is all true in this. I mean, l'chara, what's the shaila? I mean, yes, you're not allowed to use the king's things, but if it's a matter of pikuach nefesh, then the same way you can desecrate Shabbos and everything else, why shouldn't you be able to desecrate this? Now, the emes is, this should be true, not only if it's pikuach nefesh of the king, that's obvious, but even if it's pikuach nefesh of somebody else, right? Why would pikuach nefesh be subordinated? Why would the covet of the melech even be greater than pikuach nefesh? We'll come back to it. But be it as it may, he asked around. He didn't know. Asa shal be midrasha amulei. They said to him, shasa sakana shaper dami. Certainly permitted. Rachvei lepirde. He rode David HaMelech's horse, Utan V'Yazel, Tafshilayara. Hashem also gave him like Kvitas HaDerech. He was able to reach the land of the Plishtim very quickly. In the meantime, he saw Orpah, the mother of Yishvi, who was still around. Orpah was still alive. Tahavis Navla, she was spinning thread. Kichazise, when she saw Avishai, Paskate Lapilcha, she stopped spinning her thread. And she wanted to kill him. But again, when you're spinning thread, part of what you use a very sharp implement to keep the thread separate. So she stopped spinning because she wanted to throw it as a dagger. And she wanted to kill him because she knew what he was trying to do to save David. Shadisa Ilave, she threw it at him. Savra Lamictule, she wanted to kill him. Umrale, she said to Avishai, Aisili Pelach, bring me... basically, she threw it at him like a knife, but she missed. So she then made it sound like it was an accident. Oh, by the way, can you just retrieve that implement there? Just bring it back to me, and then she can throw it at him again. Paske Beresh Mocha, he threw it into her head. Because you want it back? Here it is. Again, because the concept is that halachically he considered her to be a rodent, that she was trying to kill him, and she would try to kill him again, and he has to rescue David, and she's stopping him from rescuing David, so halachically she is a rodent that he could kill. He then sees Yishvi Benayif. So Yishvi Benayif says, not afraid, because he says, I thought I could beat David, but if I have both of these guys, David and Avisha, I'm not going to be able. He himself said, I'm not going to be able to defeat them. They're going to kill me. So Ataka says, Paske le David le Eloi, le Dutch le le Rumche. So basically, this is what Rashi is saying. Paske le David le Eloi. So Yishvi took David. He threw him up in the air, and then he planted his spear with the edge of the spear up so that David would fall on the spear. What Avishai did was, Avishai recited a certain Kabbalistic name of Hashem, and that caused David to be suspended between heaven and earth. So David didn't fall, right? So Yishvi throws him up, plants him on the spear. As David is falling, Avishai says something, and David remains suspended. He does not fall. Then the Gemara asks, why did you need Avishai? Why couldn't David say the shame? Presumably David HaMelech knew whatever Avishai knew. Right? So why was Avishai needed for this incantation? So the Gemara gives an expression that a prisoner cannot get himself out of jail. Meaning, the basic idea is, again, the simple meaning would be that when you're the one that's about to fall on the spear, you don't always have the presence of mind to think of the right things to say at that moment. You needed somebody mibachutz. This is a very famous phrase. Ein chavush matir atzmo mibeis ha'asur. A prisoner cannot get himself out of jail. You need somebody else to get a prisoner out of jail. Okay. It's a long story. I have to stop here. But anyway, be this may. This whole experience, although Baruch Hashem David was Nitzel, but this whole experience was designed as a penance and a kapara for his role in the tragedy of Noah Yerachalanim. And that is why Golias' brother is called Yishbi the Nov, because he was given this power, Ish Shabah al Iskenov, because of the Chet of Noah Yerachalanim. Thank you.